The Fifth Amendment to the Constitution was meant to limit the government's power to seize private property. It's called the power of eminent domain. Here's how it reads. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Public use. Now, when most of us think of the phrase public use, we think of things open to the public, a road, a bridge, a public library. We don't think of a private basketball arena. But today, governments consider even that to be a public use, thanks to the 2005 Supreme Court opinion in Kelo versus New London. In that dreadful case, the city of New London, Connecticut, seized the home of Suzette Kelo to make way for a private redevelopment plan. The Supreme Court considered the empty promise of economic development, meaning more tax dollars to the local taxing authority, to be a public use. Joining me now is Damon Root, senior editor of Reason magazine and from Reason.com. Damon, it's a pleasure. That particular case is not only a tragedy because it allowed the states to take private property against the wishes of the owner and sell it to another private property owner. But in that particular case, the second private property owner took off. I mean, they ruined her property, and then the deal fell through, and that bad law is still the law of the land.
That's the law of the land. You know, right now, after Hurricane Irene, the city of New London said, go use that empty neighborhood as a dump site for storm debris. I mean, so the Supreme Court got it wrong, and what we see is just this absolute failure of eminent domain.
When this was being debated in Philadelphia in 1787, Alexander Hamilton argued, you know this better than I do, that the government should be able to be like the king and be able to take whatever property it wanted. Jefferson, who wasn't there, but the arguments were made through Madison, said, no, the only moral, lawful, natural transaction is one that's voluntary. So the government can only take something from you if you agree to the price and if you agree that you want to sell it. Now, the Fifth Amendment is a compromise. The government can take what it wants, but it has to pay you the fair market value, but it has to be for a public use. And for the first 150 years of the country, that was so. And then what happened?
Well, then this idea of public use started to get stretched and pulled apart, basically to the point where it's not recognizable public purpose. As you say, in Kelo, essentially the argument was, well, they're going to increase the tax base, so therefore that helps the public. But once you open the door to that, essentially the government can come in and say, well, you're not putting your property to the best use. They call it underutilization. And every property is underutilized. You can always put it to a better use,
right,
and they can take it.
Right. You can turn a Motel 6 into a McMansion, as
That's
Justice
right.
O'Connor said in her dissent in that Kelo case. Tell us about this case involving Atlantic Yards in Brooklyn, New York. Did the government actually, the city of New York actually take people's homes, their private property, and sell it to a rich developer so that he could borrow money from a Russian billionaire? And you can't make this stuff
you
up.
You can't make
and
it
build
up.
An athletic arena,
That's
which
right.
he's going to charge people to come into?
That's right. He's a real estate tycoon, Bruce Ratner, and he's also was the part owner of the Nets. And he wanted to build, he called it an urban utopia in downtown Brooklyn. And the architect he had at the time said he was looking forward to building a new neighborhood practically from scratch. Well, there was a neighborhood there, and to build it from scratch, you have to bulldoze what was already in place. And yeah, the city and state of New York came in and said, listen, you know, we want this basketball arena. We're going to call this a public use, and you people are out of luck, and forced people out of their homes and businesses.
And the people who lost their homes and businesses challenged the city of New York and lost in large measure because of that awful Kelo versus New London, Connecticut decision.
Yeah, that's right. The New York Court of Appeals, the state's highest court said, in fact, that decision is really interesting because the majority actually admitted that the whole thing might be bogus. They said, well, this, you know, we may have gone too far here, but you know what? It's for the legislature to decide. So not only do you have the government seizing property, you have the state's highest court just totally abdicating its responsibility and saying, well, you know, we're not gonna step in.
So if I were to say something like, what if the government could take your property whenever it wants? The answer to that would be, yes, it can.
Here in New York, yes, it can.
All right. Well, is there any pushback to this, either in New York or Connecticut or anywhere else in the country? Are there states that have sort of outlawed this?
Yes. In fact, since Kelo, 44 states have passed eminent domain reform law. Some are better than others. Just in the most recent election, Mississippi finally, through a state initiative, reformed its eminent domain laws also. So you have some reform going on. New York is one of the six states with no
changes.
And
the essence of the reform is you can't take this property and give it to another private property
That's
owner.
Right.
You can only take it for a highway or a bridge.
That's right.
Got it. Damon Root, it's a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Judge.
The fate of the president's health care law rests in the hands of the United States Supreme Court. Will the justices uphold the Constitution, or will they grant the government the power to force you something, to force you to buy something you might not want and may not need and might not be able to afford? The executive vice president of the Cato Institute is here next with the answers to that. The United States of America was founded on basic principles of limited government, but throughout American history, in times of crisis, these principles have been modified and even abandoned, opening the door to federal government expansion that seems it can never be shut. President Obama criticized former President George W. Bush for his expansion of the executive branch, but it is a fair assessment that But is it a fair assessment, given how President Obama has only expanded the Commander-in-Chief's role under his watch? Here to discuss are my freedom fighters, Reason Magazine senior editor Damon Root, David Bowes, Cato Institute Executive Vice President, and Hina Shamsi, ACLU National Security Project Director. Hina, to you first. Did the war on terror give the two presidents who've been in office since it started, George W. Bush and Barack Obama, carte blanche to get away with almost anything they want, as long as they can make the argument that it will keep it safe, even if it is arguably prohibited by some clause of the Constitution or by some pre-existing federal law?
Well, Judge, the superficial rhetoric of a war on terror has hardened in the last 10 years under both administrations into a set of policies that that pose a grave danger to the rule of law. The Bush presidency claimed commander-in-chief authority to engage in such things as warrantless wiretapping, the seizure of an American citizen by the military from a jail in New York right. to military prison in North Carolina, in South Carolina, I'm sorry. The Obama administration moved away from claiming commander-in-chief authority, but it still claims the authority under the AUMF, the authorization for use of military force right. that is vast and broad and threatens to entrench the war on terror, even though the administration no longer uses that nomenclature.
David, what would the founders think about the authorization to use military force? Can the president strike at any human being he wants, whether a state actor or not? And when are the hostilities authorized by the authorization to use military force to come to an end? This is not like Congress declaring war on Germany and Germany at some point surrendering. This is Congress authorizing the president to kill whoever he wants, wherever he wants, for however long he wants.
Well, I'm not sure that the people who passed the AUMF understood it to mean that the president can kill anybody he wants, anywhere he wants, for as long as he wants. I think that was understood as authorization to take necessary actions with regard to Iraq, including going to war. They passed too many of these carte blanche pieces of legislation, and it's because Congress is abdicating its authority to regulate the use of military force. So absolutely, they have taken too much power from right. this, and the founders would not have anticipated that Congress would simply say, over to you, Mr. President, do whatever you need for as long as you want,
right.
and Congress could stop it now.
David is right on the mark, and let's take the example of Libya. The president was in Brazil at the time. The Congress was on spring break. Did you know the Congress gets a spring break? Apparently they do. And that's when he said, we're bombing in Libya, but boots aren't on the ground, so it's not a war, but we're going to do it anyway, and they'll be gone in days or weeks, not months. Of course, American troops were eventually on the ground. We killed a lot of people. We overturned Gaddafi. We were there for 6 months. During that six-month period, Congress looked at several resolutions to stop the president from doing what he was doing, and none of them passed. What is Congress, a potted plant?
Unfortunately, that's how they're behaving. As David said, this abdication of their constitutional war powers to declare war. And that's one of the sad stories of this expansion of executive power is that Congress has essentially aided and abetted the president in this regard.
I can remember right after 9/11 being on another show here on Fox and the host wanting to goad me a little bit said, Judge, could George W. Bush shoot an American if he thought the American was an enemy combatant? We sort of laughed. This was the most preposterous thing we ever heard of. But of course, we now know that President Obama, under this same theory, whether it's commander-in-chief or the authorization to use military force, believes that if in his own secret thought processes there's evidence of guilt and the person is dangerous, he can suspend with due process and use a device to come out of the sky and kill this person born in New Mexico because he found him in Yemen. Where the heck is that in the Constitution?
Well, you're highlighting a number of problems, and number one amongst them is the claimed authority to use lethal force far from any battlefield. we have an important reason that Congress has that very, very significant authority under the Constitution to declare war, to identify enemies, define objectives,
right,
and to impose limits.
Right.
What's going on right now is the claim that the administration is in a worldwide and possibly forever war, and that threatens not only the rule of law, but our long-term security.
So the president acts with utter disregard, David Bowes, to the Fifth Amendment, which couldn't be clearer. The government shall not take life, liberty, or property. No person shall suffer the loss of life, liberty, or property without due process. This fellow from New Mexico didn't get any due process, did he?
Well, that's right, and that's where you get into this problem of where is the battlefield. We have rules for battlefields that are different from the rest of the world. Of course, if you encounter an enemy soldier on a battlefield, you're allowed to use lethal force. But both the Bush and Obama administrations have declared that in this war, the whole world, including the United States, is a battlefield.
Right.
And that's valuable to them because on a battlefield, there are no lawyers, there are no judges, there are no journalists, there are no members of Congress. There is only the president with his unchecked power.
Right.
And that's what is so dangerous.
Damon, listen to what David just said. He's correct. The government thinks the United States of America is a battlefield. Might the next step be a drone to kill an American here rather than to arrest him, bring the evidence before a grand jury, and if the grand jury indicts, charge the person with a crime? Stated differently, has the president opened up the most horrific can of worms since the Civil War, where he decides whom he can kill on American soil?
Unfortunately, that is in fact the legal rationale that we're operating under. And I understand that lots of Barack Obama's supporters voted him in thinking he would be somewhat of an anti-war candidate. But one of the concerns is whoever is in the White House has this power. And so whether or not we think Obama would use it, there will be a president who will. And that's one of the reasons we need a fundamental change.
Will the courts save us? I mean, the courts really restrained George W. Bush in Guantanamo Bay. And Justice Sandra Day O'Connor says the Constitution goes wherever the government goes. But now we see his successor doing things that I don't think George W. Bush could have gotten away with.
Well, it's not just Congress that's failed to rein in the executive power grab, it's also the courts. The ACLU brought a lawsuit on behalf of Anwar al-Awlaki's father,
right,
seeking to ask the courts to state what the law is and to require disclosure of the standards.
Before the president had him killed.
Before the president
had him killed. And what happened to that case?
The court found that the father did not have standing to sue on behalf of his son, and most problematically, that the authority to use lethal force, including against a U.S. citizen far from any battlefield, was a political question committed to the executive that the judiciary did not want to weigh in on.
And within 2 weeks, the son was dead. David Bowes, Hina Shamsi, Damon Root, it's a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. When we return, I'll answer the question, do we still have a constitution? We'll be right back.